Dear brothers and sisters, the people are crying for peace. How can we have it? Peace should start from our hearts. We should deal out peace as given out by Guru Nanak. He prayed, "Peace be to all the world over, O Lord, under thy ground." So for this, naturally, there should be a spiritual revolution. I'm using the word revolution, you see. The world is already in revolution. And this revolution should be different from other revolutions. This revolution will not be of the body, but against the evil propensities of the mind which keep us away from God. This will be achieved if we give right understanding to the people at large, which will result in right thoughts. First comes understanding, then comes thoughts, and from right thoughts will result in right speech. And right speech will result in right actions. The whole thing starts from the right understanding. So you'll find right understanding lies in the fact what? First, that there is a maker of the universe who is the controlling power and permeates all creation. This world did not come out of itself. It is maker of this. The scientists lately have come to the conclusion that the whole creation is controlling by some power which is conscious. So that first thing it is, the whole world is the manifestation of God. No east, no west. The earth below and sky overhead is his manifestation. Guru Nanak went to Mecca. At night he was lying down with the tree towards Mecca, the house of God. The servants over there rebuked Guru Nanak, "Why are you lying with your hand, your feet towards Mecca, the house of God?" He politely told them, "Dear friend, I see God all around. There is no place where He is not. If you think God is at the other side where God is not, then you may turn my feet towards that." So Master say, all is holy where devotion kneels. This is first right understanding. Al-Nisa'i, a great Mohammedan sage, he says, the whole world is blessed because God permeates all. If my fathers find the time for prayers, they can sit on any ground, anywhere, and say praise to God, no matter what way their face is. Because God is everywhere. Quran, the Mohammedan scripture with us, also says that God is everywhere. That matters little when you face westward or eastward. You say your prayers where you are. So the first right understanding, we are living in Him, being in Him, is in us, out us, above us, below us. Like fish, we are having no resistance in Him. That is right understanding. And further, God made man with equal privileges, all born the same way, no high, no low, all have got the same constitution outside, two eyes, two ears, two nostrils, mouth, and two on the knees. Every day morning, municipality takes a fifth of the body, no high, no low, inner constitution also the same. And the same body, we are keeping us in the body some higher power, which is the same for all. So this is the right understanding that we are. If we have this thing, God resides in every heart. All His holy devotion names, all are born with the same privilege from God. No east, no west. So this will result in right thoughts. On my last visit, I attended one meeting which is called the East and the West. All who visited this America, they were asked to attend that meeting, and I was also one of them. Each man gave his own state where from he has come. When my turn came up, I told him, it is signed, of course, that East is for the East and West for the West, and the two shall never meet. But I told them, there is no East and West. The whole creation is the house of our Father. All countries are the so many rooms in the house of our Father. It is we who have made East and West on account of for want of right understanding. So this is the one thing. Scientists have also now come to know that there is one power controlling all creation, which is consciousness. If you have this understanding, what will be the result? Your whole angle of view will change. We are all children of God, the same Father. The two fathers of God and brotherhood of man will be cemented. So this is what it is. I mean spiritual revelation. The people will say from the godlessness. So Kabir says, behold, but one in all things. Guru Arjan says, visible and invisible, all are His manifestation. Lord Krishna says, what? He who sees me in all things in me, is my dear. To masters, when they come, they say, first message they bring is, there is God. They say, we have seen God. With what eyes? Then those eyes are different from these eyes of flesh and bones. That eye exists in everybody. That's called third eye, single eye, latent eye. So the whole world, they say, is His manifestation, and He resides in every heart, and as such, physical body, we are having the true temple of God. So by right understanding, I mean that. If this right understanding is brought to the notice of all people at large, that with right understanding, that we arise right thoughts, then will come right speech and right actions. Although we are wearing different labels of religions, all the same we are all one. These labels show only that we, which particular tool we have joined to realize this unity. The ultimate goal of all religions is to know God. And to know God, we must know ourselves first. Because God cannot be known by the outgoing faculties, mind or intellect. Soul can alone know the Oversoul. Like knows the like. The primal manifestation of God is called Word or Nam, which is the cause of all creation, who is the maker of all creation, controller of all creation, and permeating all creation. You'll find in the Bible that is why it says, in the beginning was the Word, Word was with God, Word was God. All things were made by Him, and without Him was not anything made that was made. So similarly, Vedas say so. They use the word Prajapati for that, exactly the same word. Similarly, Guru Nanak orders Saint Tirthas, Naam is the creator of all the universe. So this is God into expression power. When manifested, there was vibration which results in light and sound. So this power, master people have given myriads of names to express this power. The sages have described God in innumerable ways. Some call Him Swami, means Lord. Others call Him Agam, incomprehensible and indescribable. Satpurusha means eternal. There are many other qualitative names which go to express the name of this power. To differentiate between the two, these are some words given to denote that power which is the cause of all creation, the outer expressions of which is light and sound. So Master come to differentiate sometimes to clarify the whole position. Ninth Guru, Guru Tegh Bahadur, in question, what is that Naam, the remembrance of which leads to Nirvana? Again he says, what is that Naam, the repetition whereof enables the person. So that is God into expression power, contact which is possible by man body only. Guru Arjan says, a contact with Naam makes oneself luminous, the luminosity varying with myriads of suns. So I am quoting only to show what the Master really meant. We say Ram. Ram means permeating all. The word Ram means what is permeating. That what is permeating, that is a different thing. The word Ram means is permeating. So these words go to express that power which is the cause of all creation, which can be seen with the, not with the eyes of flesh or bones, but with the single eye or third eye which is opened by the Master. So by the grace of God, a true initiate prays, O God, manifest the divine light of Naam within me. It is already there. Take it that the light which is within you is not darkness. So it is something Guru Nanak says, it is not the subject of the, what of the eyes. It is something wonderful. Those eyes are different which can be seen. So all Master has been telling like that. Kabir says, There are myriads of names in the world, myriads. But none of them can grant salvation. They follow Matthew. There are myriads of names given to God, but none of them grant salvation. And which is that particular name which gives salvation is the primeval name, is the hidden one. And the rare soul can know and realize that the hidden name. That is the power permeating all creation. The outer expression of which is light and sound that can be seen by eyes, not of flesh and bones, but the inner eye. That is not music of the spheres, which can be heard not with the physical ears, but that inner ear which exists in every man. So you'll find, with the grace of some master, we who can open this new world within us, we see. So take the example, you see, to understand the thing, water is a liquid thing, called in different languages by different names. It's called water, aqua, Latin, U in French. In Spanish may be something different. In English it's called jal, nir. Persian it is called ab. In other language it's called pani. So these are the words go to denote that liquid thing by drinking which you can satisfy your thirst. Not by repeating the mere names given to express that liquid water. So God into expression power. It's called world, it's called nam, that is called kalma, which is the creator of all creation, and that is to express light and sound. Masters come, they contact with the God into expression within us. See? Open our inner eye by raising us some about the physical body and outward faculties. We begin to see. So that is why it is said, you see, devotion nam to nam is the only true worship. God is spirit. We can worship in spirit alone. Outer words are used as an instrument itself to direct what is what. So thy word is a lamp unto my feet and light on my path. Guru Amar Das says everyone does worship, but on the sensual plane only, so they get no results to stand in salvation. But absorption in the Naam purifies the mind and bears fruit in abundance. You know how to follow? Words are words, but these words, what do they denote? That is a different thing, that is the controlling power of all creation, permeating all creation, and permeating and controlling us in the body too. So body is the true temple of God, in which we really dwell, and also that power keeps us in the body. So, the great by the word of Lord were the heavens made, and all the host of them. He spake, and it was done. Kun piyumun. These are scriptures say so. Now you follow what is meant by Naam, or word, or God. So Christ said, man shall not live by bread alone, but every word that proceedeth from the mouth of God. Master says there is God, very definite, who is the maker of all creation, permeating all creation. And further they say this world did not come out of itself, but it is made by some power which is conscious. So masters tell us like that. Then becomes all this manifestation is is God's. Because He is the creator, there is nothing was before Him. All these things made after Him, means these are the manifestation of Him. Now the question arises, why can't we see Him? When the Master said they do see Him, why can't we see Him? Why can't we see Him? They say, because He is the subtlest of the subtlest. Ati agam. If you now try to understand by example, India, nothing appears to be there, all vacant. But if you see through a microscope, what it does, it magnifies things 700 times bigger. You look through it, you'll find all this atmosphere full of microbes. So if you see through a microscope, the air will appear to be full of microbes or insects, which heaven it is now. So if our eye becomes to the level or to that level, or that what is in the air magnified to come to our level, we will be able to see Him. If in man's body is the wonderful house we live in, it has got 9 apertures, but we cannot run away out of it. There are 2 eyes, 2 nostrils, mouth, 2 ears, 2 underneath. We cannot run away out of it. So body works as long as we are in the body. We are in the body as long as some power keeps us in the body. When that is withdrawn, we have to leave the body. So God resides in the body. We also reside in this man body. God also resides in this body, keeping us in the body. So man body is the highest in all creation. It is a golden opportunity afforded to us to enable us to see God. So in man body only we can know God, and in no other body. So saints tell us, well, strange enough, while God is with us in the body, we see Him not. He says, though to see every man is top blind. You see? Why on a lifeless life like this? They see light is in everybody. Take it that the light within you is not darkness. The Master come, well, all right. They make people see you who do not see. It cannot be seen if it is not already there. So Kabir says, the world, entire world is groping darkness. If it were a question of 1 or 2, they could be set right. But he says, wherever I see, all are blind in the terminology of the spirituality. So Guru Nanak said to the enlightened ones, all are firm blind. Man who sees Him is there, and other people do not see, naturally they are spiritually blind. When you come to a Master, what is there? He makes you see. Open your inner eye, or the third eye, or the single eye, which can be seen. So in the terminology of the saints, the word blind means not those who have got no eyes on the forehead, but whose inner or single eye is not open. So the eyes of flesh see Him not, but the Master illumines the eyes, you see, within. The worthy disciple begins to witness the power and glory of God in himself. When Master comes, he opens his eyes. Now, why can't we see again, I would say, enveloped in darkness, we strive for God by deeds, not less darkness. Without a perfect man, none has found the way, nor one can do so. As I submitted yesterday, you know, all outer specs, subjects, we need somebody to guide us in the outer ways, those ways which are at the level of housing faculty, mind, or interest. And this is a way which is where all philosophies and their religion starts. There's needed somebody to usher you to the beyond, to rise above body consciousness, withdraw your attention from all outside, and open the single eye to see the light of God. Here also such a person required, when you go beyond, there also you need him. He guides you further too. One comes across a perfect master, he cannot see. When he comes to the feet of the master, he begins to see. We are blind before coming to him in the terminology of the saints. When he gives a sitting, we become wise. When we come to him, we are deaf, spiritually deaf. When he gives a sitting, we begin to hear the sound of voice of God. The master said, you see, you see what the old prophets did all their best but could not see. You hear what the old prophets could not hear. Are not such people are most fortunate to have a living master? So body is verily the true temple of God, and the Holy Ghost dwells in it. Emerson says, tap inside, tapping inside and going into the foxhole in the brain. This foxhole in the brain is called Brahma Rudra. And President Truman also referred to it that when he was tired with the outer performance of duties, he entered to the foxhole of the brain. We all call it, you see, Brahma Rudra, perception, intuition, and reasoning just help to understand the reality to a certain extent, not beyond. Now, you see, you're understanding this. At the level of the intellect, but seeing is believing. Seeing with one's own eyes, the single eye, this inlet and ingress, we know little or nothing about that. This is what the master gave. So Nanak says, the blind know not the door. And Guy refers to it, now can it shall be opened unto you. Whoever hears my voice, I shall pass, sup with him and he will sup with me. So we will have to revert to the third eye, latent eye, or the third eye, Shivnetra within us. God said, let there be light. The result was, what? There was light. Didn't say so. And this is the sunlight that lighteth every man that cometh into the world. And light is the life of man. That light is within you. Take heed that the light within you is not dark. So all scriptures describe rays of light vibrating with the music of life. Go hand in hand. Ring radiance, you might say, to what new use you can do. Ringing radiance. Emanating from the formless absolute existence when it came to manifest the world in its relegated colors or countless shapes and forms. Thank God, He has made all creation and He is not still away from that. He also permeated it. He is permeated in all creation, He is still quite above all this creation.
Good morning, and welcome to the Satsang for Master Kirpal Singh. The recording you just heard was the first half of Master's talk, which was called The Coming Spiritual Revolution. and it was given on December 7th, 1972, in Fort Lauderdale, Florida. Our reader this morning is Christine Clevenger. Hello, Christine.
Hello, David. Hello to everyone. And this morning I'm going to continue reading a talk titled Out of Bondage, which is in the January 1970 Satsang Desh. This talk was originally given in Hindi by Master Kirpal Singh at a satsang in India. So I'm going to reread the first page of this talk, and then I'll go to page 12. God is known as Sat, ever-existing, and the world is Asat, changing. In the Hindu holy scriptures, it states that the world is all Asat, and only the soul is Sat. Why is the soul called Sat? Because it is made of one substance only, and that is all consciousness. If anything is made of one substance, there is no question of its disintegrating. Why is the world Asat? Because it is made of matter in the form of elements, which in turn are broken down into atoms, neutrons, protons, etc., and any admixture of substances is subject to disintegration. Our body is an exact copy of the Brahman, or the three divisions of creation, for we have three bodies within us, corresponding to the physical, astral, and causal planes. God has given us a body made of matter, through which we are working in this world, which is also made of matter. At the time of death, we leave this body and use the astral body, which works in the next plane, sometimes known as the other world. Ahead of this, there is the causal body. The purpose of these bodily coverings is to enable us to work in all three worlds whenever we are so inclined, and if we feel like it, to take off all three coverings and go into God's lap. On page 12, those who have seen continue to admonish with such words. You are the soul, a part of God, who is residing within you. Through the illusion of the body, you also became attached to material objects. And the result is that wherever your attention is, so you become that. You are under the influence of the mind and senses, are feeding the senses through the outgoing faculties, and the more you feed them, the harder the mind will work and the more strength it will get. As the mind is surrounding the soul must take the consequences and suffer. It is true that the soul never dies, but because it is tied to the mind, it has to be responsible. This knot has to be untied, and then it will know who it truly is. This human being is really both attention and awakened attention. Outward expression of soul is called surat, attention or dayan. There is no doubt that we have got this human form through very high destiny. In this form, we can do that great work, and in no other form. What is that great work? To realize God. We know so much about the body, how to keep it healthy, and how it becomes sick. There are many kinds of doctors attending on it. The Ayurvedic practice is the oldest. Then Unani came, and after that the allopathic system, homeopathy, electric and radiation treatment, naturopathy, etc. On how to keep the body fit, our knowledge is vast. Intellectually, we have also advanced with amazing strides. A dog has circled the world in 1 1/4 hours. Across thousands of miles, we can hear and see things through radio and television. This is all due to the intellect. In olden days, when blind King Dhritarashtra could not see the progress on the battlefield during the Mahabharata war, Sanjay, an advisor, related the proceedings to the king in his own palace, many miles away. This proves that there was radio and television in those times, but all that advanced science was destroyed in that great battle, and the process of learning had to begin again. Day by day, the world is becoming smaller through the accomplishments of the intellect. A plane has been designed recently which can reputedly travel from America to India in a few hours. You can breakfast in America and dine in India. The question is, however, has all this brought us any happiness? Most definitely not. And the reason? The third part of us, the soul, is extremely weak. We are the true picture of consciousness, but having lost our identity and forgetfulness, we have become one with the body and regard all things from this level. The result is attachment. This human form is also known as an action ground. Christ said, "As ye sow, so shall ye reap." All masters have said the same thing in their various languages. Guru Nanak said, "This body is the field of tomorrow. Whatever you sow, you will have to harvest yourself." Tulsi Sahib said, "You will have to taste the fruit of your actions in whichever way you plant them." Those who have solved the riddle have to repeat the same thing again and again, for truth is one. All spiritual aspirants should think of this life as a field and should sow carefully whatever they desire to harvest. As I mentioned at first, there is no special caste or creed here. We have taken the first step, that is, we have entered a school. I congratulate you for that, and no matter what thought has led you to this step forward to realize God, you should now do your best to succeed. For good reason, this ashram is called Ruhani Satsang, which means a spiritual school. There is no need to change anything, either religion, name, outer appearances, etc. Having taken the first step, the second should be to see the true doer, so that you may become action-free. Good actions will no doubt bring their reward, but you will still be a prisoner. Perhaps some will go into a Class A prison, some Class B, some Class C. Some might get the pleasures of this world, and some the pleasures of the other worlds. Heaven and hell will come again and again, for this circle cannot be broken unless one gets out of the illusion. A woman saint, Sajobai, said that all living species of the land, sea, and air are under the law of karma. Just look at the lower expressions of life. For instance, the dog. Some dogs are starving without even a piece of bread, and some are looked after like princes with two or more servants to care for them. See the life of a camel. His nose is pierced, and a rope drawn through it with which to control him. In the deserts he is pulled from place to place, be it very hot or very cold, and he has to suffer all this. Take the donkey, who has so much weight loaded upon his back and is driven around by the stick. When he gets tired, he is then pulled and made to work. The whole world is in a sorrowful state, all through the results of karmas. The human form, because of the soul within it, is the highest in all creation, and is accepted as the form next to God. It is next to God, a part of God, having the same nature, is itself a conscious entity, and yet with all this, it is full of misery. Having tied itself to the mind, the passions and attachments of the senses are dragging it from one place to another. The pleasures of the world control the senses. The senses control the mind, and the mind controls the intellect. This process is called kām, or passionate desires and other appetites. Kām also means work, and if we put this desire or drive into reverse and become engaged in the opposite type of work, then we will achieve the true peace of being. A true master always prays, O Lord, keep my intellect in your control. At present, the whole system is wrong, for the horse should have been pulling the cart, but instead the cart is in front. The soul should be giving strength to the mind, as and how it wishes, but the mind, intellect, and senses are stealing the strength, with the soul a helpless slave to them. It is all wrong. That is why masters have advised to know thyself, for it is the only way to cut the evil from the root. Have you been able to control your senses and make them do whatever you wish, stopping their action whenever you desire to? Have you reached that stage? A certain piece of machinery has an electric motor which is connected to the powerhouse. There are many sections comprising this machine, and one can switch off any section in a second. Similarly, we should be in control of our being and be able to switch off our whole machinery if we wish to. Sometimes, with our eyes open, we do not see, and with ears open, we do not hear. Many people have experienced this. We may be sitting deep in thought, and someone calls once, twice, three times, but we do not hear a word. At last, when the person says, "I have been shouting at you, why do you not hear me?" the reply would be something like, "My attention was engaged somewhere else." So this attention works wherever it connects itself. If the attention is not in the ears, we will not hear a sound. The ears may belong to us, but if we do not give life to them, they are as dead. Sometimes our eyes are open and someone passes in front of us, but we do not see them. A person can sit down beside us and after a while get up and leave, and we would not even know they had been there. Anything might happen behind our back, but we cannot see it because our attention is not there. Our eyes are not directed there. When we look in front of us with attention, we can see. This all indicates that we, as soul, are giving strength to everything. We can control ourselves if only we will withdraw ourselves from the outgoing faculties, for the world is attractive only as long as our attention is on it. If we withdraw our attention and know what we are, we will then be able to see God within us. The overflowing pen of God writes our fate according to our present and past actions. So whatever seed we have sown will bear that kind of fruit. If we can see the God into expression power, that seed can be destroyed even after sowing by being conscious of the divine plan. There are many kinds of karmas or actions. One type is our everyday actions, that is, the new seeds we are sowing. When we got this human form, it was through the prarabdha or fate karmas. Some people are poor, others rich. Some are happy and some unhappy. And all this is due to the prarabdha or destiny of each. There are also those karmas called sanchit, which are accounts of deeds in past lives upon lives, lying in store and hanging over our heads. It is said that when King Dhritarashtra was asked what he had done to be blind from birth, he stated that for 100 lives back, he knew by yogic power that he had done nothing to cause such affliction. Then Lord Krishna gave him power by which he was able to see that in the 106th life back, he had committed that action for which he was now paying with his blindness. This shows us that the load on our head is heavy with the karmas of life upon life. We can only be rid of these sanchit karmas when we get a human form and succeed in seeing the reality within. Otherwise, the account will remain and we will continue to add to it. When the masters come, they wind up our karmas. How do they do it? By drawing a line across the account and advising that in future one should cease further transgressions. They advise the dear seekers to adopt the way of true living. Do not lie, cheat, or steal. Do not take anything by fraud or squeeze anyone's blood for self-gain. It is most important to be truthful. If you have read the account of the Mahabharata, you will know that when the 5 Pandav princes went to school, their teacher, Dronacharya, once gave them the lesson that they should speak and live the truth. The next day, 4 of the princes came to school, but the 5th, Yudhishthira, did not attend. After 4 or 5 days of non-attendance, the teacher asked, "Why is he not coming?" Word was sent to Yudhishthira, who sent back the reply, "I am studying the lesson you gave me." After many days, he came to school and reported, "I have learned this lesson about the truth." This is really the way to learn. They say that through his whole life, he never told a lie. The masters say that one should have true living and also lead a chaste life in thought, word, and deed. All human beings are the temples of God in which God resides. All are his own children, so we should never look down on anyone with hatred or dislike. Through their karmas, some people are sitting on chairs while others run around to bring chairs for them. Very often, because a man is more learned or rich or in authority, it goes up like wine to his head and he starts to look down on others. This should not happen. Masters also tell us that as God is residing in every human being, we should do selfless service toward each other. If someone is physically sick, look after them. If a person is starving or thirsty or has no clothes, then share with them whatever you possess yourself. Through thoughts, words, and actions, we should not be violent toward anyone. Thoughts are very potent. There is a story about King Akbar who had a minister named Birbal. Once Birbal was telling the king that thoughts are very potent and whatever one thinks will affect the other person. The king demanded that Birbal should prove this, so Birbal led the way and they went out of the town. The king's head was uncovered at the time. When Birbal saw a man walking toward them, he said, "Your Majesty, think something about this man." The king did not utter a word, but in his mind he thought, "I would like to shoot him." When the man came near, the king said to him, "Speak truthfully, and you will be forgiven for whatever you say. But tell me, what were your thoughts when you saw me?" The man replied, "The truth is, Your Majesty, that when I saw your bare head, I felt like smashing it with my fist." This was the result of a thought. One should never regard anyone by thought, and even by tongue, no wrong should be spoken against any person. No harm should be done through actions. If we really want to realize God, we should consider how unlikely it is that He will appear to us if we are harming His children. Which father would? When masters come, they do not disturb the prarabdha karmas, although in one way they do. They start giving food to the soul. To feed the physical form, we have to eat and drink. To strengthen the intellect, we read, write, and think. All these words are food for the intellect. The soul is fed only with the bread of life, which is experience of the beyond. With such food, the soul becomes very strong, and though unhappiness and sorrow may come, it will not have so much effect. If there is a thorny road to travel and one puts on heavy boots, then one will not feel the thorns. Say there are 10 people and they get beaten up physically. One of them is very weak, and after a slight beating, he collapses. The others admit they were beaten up but did not feel it much. Similarly, if the soul is strong, happiness or unhappiness may come, but will not have any drastic effects. O Supreme Master, what is the use of calling you my teacher if my karmas have not been wiped out? A guru's work is to wind up the karmas. It is also said, what is the use of going to a lion for protection when even the howling of a jackal can frighten you. A guru's work is very important, such work that no one else can take over. Only a true guru can do it, because God works through him, because his soul has become one with God, and he has become the mouthpiece of God. There is no difference between him and God. Perfect saints always show us a way to lead our lives so that we are freed from bondage, that we may never return again to this world. They make us wear strong shoes that the thorns may not prick us on life's journey. There are two kinds of masters who come. One is called a sant or saint, the other an avatar. Both work with the same power, just as electricity can give us both fire and ice, even though the source remains the same. The avatars explain, whenever there is more sin in the world and righteous living is gone, then I appear. So you can see that the working of that power is different. They are not bound by karmas, but come only for a great purpose. That is why they advise that one should not meditate on the outer form of the master, but on the true form of the master, Word made flesh. The avatar's work is such that they sometimes have to take a sword in hand to further their task of punishing the wicked and upholding the righteous. They must keep the world in proper balance. The saints say, whosoever comes to me, I will connect him back to God. The difference between saints and avatars can be further illustrated by taking an emperor who has a viceroy ruling the affairs of one of his countries and a commander-in-chief over the army. Both these men have different ways of dealing with matters. The viceroy will never order anyone directly, but will say, in the name of the emperor, I order you to do this, while the commander-in-chief will say, I order you to fire. The latter knows that he is under the emperor, but is in complete control of the army, giving promotion or demotion, and will never allow anyone to go out of his jurisdiction. The viceroy never orders, but says that he is announcing the wishes of the emperor. Kabir Sahib says, I know the truth, but I have come to tell you the wishes of my Lord. So avatars improve the condition of the world by giving punishment and reward, and saints give salvation. There are many prisons in the world, and supposing a man visits one of them to give an uplifting talk to the inmates, he notices the lack of good food there, and so makes arrangement for the food to be improved at his own expense. Another man also visits the same prison, and seeing that the prisoner's clothes are torn and ragged, he kindly supplies large quantities of new clothing for their use. A third visitor finds that the prisoner's cells are dark and unventilated, and so he volunteers to remodel the buildings to provide better living quarters. All these things have vastly improved the life of the prisoners, but unfortunately, they are still prisoners. Finally, another man comes, and he opens the gates of the prison, saying, "You are all free. I release you." Who do you think was the greatest benefactor out of all these men? When true masters come, they release the soul from the wheel of births and deaths. a perfect master is not a small thing. He is the supreme power because God himself is working in him. Though one can see that the voice is coming from his physical form, it is not he who is speaking, but God in him. And I will stop here and continue this reading at a future date. I read Out of Bondage from the January 1970 Satsandesh. This talk was originally given in Hindi by Master Kripal Singh at a satsang in India. Thank you, gracious Master.
And thank you, Christine, for reading for us. There were 88 people at today's satsang. Thank you, everyone, for listening. And thank you, Master, for providing this for us.
So thank you all of my, for your patient hearing, what I've come to know, what I should show you. I'll carry my sweet remembrance of you all and pray God may take you back home. That's all I can say, the best wishes I can have for all of you.